The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. On this edition of Century, we look at drug trafficking and transnational crime in the Amazon Basin and the tri-border region of Brazil, Colombia, and Peru. But first, on Friday, January 3rd, United States Surgeon General Dr. Vivek Murthy released a new Surgeon General's advisory on alcohol and cancer risk. The Surgeon General's advisory notes that research shows alcohol consumption to be the third leading preventable cause of cancer in the United States after tobacco and obesity. Nearly 100,000 cancer cases in the U.S. alone in 2019 were related to alcohol consumption, and alcohol-related cancers claimed the lives of about 20,000 people in the U.S. each year. And yet, less than half of U.S. adults are aware of the link between alcohol consumption and cancer. The Surgeon General's advisory includes recommendations to help reduce alcohol-related cancers and deaths, including updating the existing Surgeon General's warning label on alcoholic beverages to include cancer risk, and reassessing guideline limits for alcohol consumption. A copy of the advisory, entitled Alcohol and Cancer Risk, is available through the U.S. Surgeon General's website, surgeongeneral.gov. Now to our main story. One region that's been particularly hard hit and transformed by this foolish drug war is the Amazon Basin and the tri-border region of Brazil, Colombia, and Peru. The Global Initiative on Transnational Organized Crime, GTOC for short, released a new report recently entitled Illicit Frontiers, Criminal Governance in the Amazon's Tri-Border Region. To discuss the report's findings, here's the lead author, Gabriel Fenari, head of GTOC's Observatory of Illicit Economies in the Amazon Basin.
The driving force behind this research was to really try to understand the urban dynamics of the Amazon. And this is something that in GTOC's prior research and, you know, in us like debating the ongoing literature, we've realized that urban issues sometimes get lost when we're talking about organized crime in the Amazon, environmental issues in the Amazon, that there's a certain gap in the literature in terms of what are the roles of Amazonian cities in driving these, you know, extremely harmful illicit economies, in contributing to the environmental degradation that is ongoing in the Amazon. And the idea that we worked with Fez on was precisely to choose Lichis and Tabatinga as kind of pilot sites for us to understand, you know, these patterns of criminality and violence that, you know, we've seen. All of us who research Brazil, Colombia, other countries of the region, we're very used to researching the larger cities like Rio, São Paulo, Medellin. But the idea behind this research is let's try to see if these patterns of criminal governance that we see in the larger cities also pan out in the urban centers of the Amazon. So we had kind of general guiding questions that helped shape the research, but that revolved around this issue, right? How is organized crime affecting kind of day-to-day public order and public security in Lechice and Tabatinga, in these two cities? What's been the impact of this rise in organized crime for local communities? And how have state institutions responded to this phenomenon, right, of this kind of incipient forms of criminal governance that we're seeing in the Amazon? So we had a relatively short time frame to undertake this research, but I think we managed to do quite a lot in this small space of time. We centered the research around fieldwork, basically, and on qualitative analysis. So we relied mostly on interviews with people in law enforcement, prosecutors, people in government agencies, humanitarian actors, and lots of civil society people who are on the ground. Dealing with indigenous causes, people who are dealing with socioeconomic development on the ground in Lichis and Tabatinga as well. That was kind of our main source of research. We also relied on local press clippings, which we know can kind of enlighten and help kind of us draw out these timeframes of, you know, when these criminal groups come in, what kind of impact are they having on the ground. And we also used existing research to kind of supplement our primary data sources. So I want to start kind of discussing the findings of the report with this map that GI's editorial team kindly put together, and I think is brilliant because a lot of the issues that we were going to talk about both today and in the report stems from an issue of geography and the fact that Lechice and Tabatinga are kind of in a very strategic location for licit and illicit transnational flows. And all the issues of criminal governance and violence that we see stem from the kind of unique location of these two cities. So it's really, we're dealing with a single urban space shared by two countries. So Lechica on the Colombian side, Tabachinga on the Brazilian side. This is an urban center of around 110,000 people, 80,000 of which live in Tabatinga and 30,000 to 40,000 of which live in Leticia. And not only is this urban center shared by two countries, it's in the immediate vicinity of a third country. So across the Amazon River, you have the Peruvian territories of the Amazon already. So we're dealing with a location that's not only geographically in the heart of the rainforest, it's also, the epicenter, this junction between the three largest countries in the region. It's also because of, again, this issue of geography and the connection that the Amazon River, with its scale, is able to provide. We're dealing with a location that's directly connected to drug-producing regions in Colombia and Peru, producing regions of both coca and cannabis. And this is kind of the junction in which these jurisdictions, these drug-producing jurisdictions, arrive in Brazilian territory. And through the Brazilian Amazon, through the Amazon River in Brazil, these products are able to reach both international markets and also the Brazilian consumer market, which is the second largest consumer market for cocaine in the world. So Leticia Tabachinga, it's really, it's the region, the reason why we undertook this research was precisely because of these kind of unique features of these two cities, and also what it could reveal to us about not only these drug flows, but the flow of these other very profitable illicit economies that we see expanding throughout the Amazon. So the Amazon drug route really starts to take shape in the 1970s and 1980s with the kind of traditional, kind of original Colombian drug cartels. So the Cali and Medellin cartels started to use the Amazon River to ship drugs through Brazil's Atlantic coast, right? So the Amazon River ends up in the ports of Brazil's Atlantic coast, mainly in the Belém region. And so from very early on, the days of transnational drug trafficking, the first forays of international drug trafficking, the Colombian drug cartels saw the strategic value of moving drugs through the Amazon River, precisely because very, very little policing. Again, the expanse of the Amazon River makes it almost logistically impossible for law enforcement to be able to supervise the entire span of the river. The distance between Tabatinga and Manaus, which we see here is kind of the midway point of the Amazon drug route, is 1,000 kilometers. So, I mean, we're dealing with massive distances, and issues that we're familiar with in terms of deficient state institutions and low state capacity in many different facets. So this was obviously a plus for drug trafficking groups to start moving drugs through this region. But Lechice and Tabachinga become major nodes for transnational drug trafficking. A lot of that has to do with the work of local criminal entrepreneurs who were able to broker agreements with these Colombian cartels and with Brazilian consumers as well to be able to move drugs through the region. So the major criminal entrepreneur who I think is a very important part of this story is Don Evaristo Porras, who was a Colombian national from Leticia, but he was kind of the boss of the local criminal ecosystem, both on the Peruvian, Brazilian, and the Colombian sides of the tri-border. And he kind of helped bring, Pablo Escobar would stop over in Leticia every once in a while to meet with him, and they would broker these agreements to send large shipments through the Amazon River. So Leticia and Tabachinga, kind of from the early days of transnational drug trafficking, became a major center for mainly logistical, right? So in the early days of transnational drug trafficking, drug traffickers would basically use Leticia and Tabachinga as a stopover point. So to refuel, to restock on supplies, to reach agreements with the local brokers and local Brazilian operatives who were interested in purchasing drugs wholesale there already. So at this point in time, we see Lechice and Tabachinga, the impact of organized crime in this jurisdiction is minimal, right? Because the drugs are only, they're being moved across this territory. So that starts to change in the 1990s when the large Colombian drug cartels are dismantled and you have a fragmentation of the drug market in Colombia. During this time, you see the FARC coming in quite aggressively in both producing, processing, and selling drugs. And these brokers that we see in the beginning dealing with the likes of Pablo Escobar also reach agreements with the FARC in the 1990s. so that drugs can continue to be shipped through Lecce and Tabacinga. This is kind of coincides with the process of urbanization in this region. So Lecce and Tabacinga, up until this point, are sparsely populated. They're really, countryside villas almost. But at this point, you start to see large amounts of local indigenous population from the wider tri-border region migrating to Lecce and Tabacinga to work and kind of try to make money out of the commercial flows of this border region. So with this, you also have the large prison-based Brazilian criminal groups, the Comando Vermelho, originally, also starting to see the strategic value of the tri-border region for their own purposes. So this might take too much time to explain, but basically the Comando Vermelho, originally from Rio de Janeiro, they kind of their first forays into international drug trafficking was through Paraguay. So they had kind of long-standing links with Paraguayan suppliers to move cocaine and cannabis through that country. In the 90s, there's a lot more competition in Paraguay. The geopolitics of crime in that region becomes a lot trickier. And the Comando, mainly through one of its leaders, Fernandinho Beiramar, decides to expand into the tri-border region of the Amazon, precisely again because of these.
Because of you.
So they start to basically see the value of being based in the Amazon tri-border region to have direct links with Colombian drug suppliers, namely the FARC. So from the late 90s onwards, you see a very strong link between the Comando Vermelho and the FARC, wherein the Comando would bring in weapons that it would purchase in Brazil, and it would exchange these weapons for drugs with the FARC. And it's at this moment that we see organized crime really start to affect kind of day-to-day community life, again, in these two cities that are growing at a rapid speed during this time. So this is where we see dynamics that are familiar to us who study, again, Medellin, São Paulo, Rio, Guayaquil, where informal urbanization kind of becomes interconnected with organized crime, with criminal dynamics, with the territorialization of organized crime, if you will. Because it's at this point where you see drugs being sold in Lecce and Tabatinga for the first time. And this has the purposes of helping to finance the very expensive logistics of the Amazon drug route. So, even purchasing fuel in that region of the world is incredibly expensive. Hiring out boats is incredibly expensive. So you start to see drug sales taking place to help finance these logistics. You start to see local youth being hired by these large groups to work as drug mules, both through the river routes, but also through the flights from Tabatinga to Manaus. And then you see, again, mass incarceration starts to rear its head. You start to see the likes of the Comando Vermelho and the PCC recruiting local youth in these local prisons. And then you also there's an explosion of hired killings, basically, of sicarios starting to operate in this region. And this is what was interesting in the interviews that we conducted in the region is that there was very much a before and after. Again, we compared the 2000s to more recently. Whereas before, people, sicarios, it was a common occurrence for there to be hired killings in Lecce and Tabatinga. But there was a saying that we kept hearing during our interviews that, during that time, this is the sentence that I have here at the end of this slide, is that the bullets from the sicarios kind of had a name and a destination. People knew, people who got killed, they knew the reasons why people would get killed. And violence was in many ways kind of controlled and kind of made sense in a way. People realized the kind of criminal disputes that were going on at the time. But there's a notable shift kind of in the following decades.
That's Gabriel Frinari, head of the Observatory of Illicit Economies in the Amazon Basin at the Global Initiative on Transnational Organized Crime. He's author of the new report from GTOC entitled Illicit Frontiers, Criminal Governance in the Amazon's Tri-Border Region. We'll hear more in a moment. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Now let's hear more from Gabriel Frinari and GTOC's new report, Illicit Frontiers, Criminal Governance in the Amazon's Tri-Border Region.
You start to see even more intense criminal competition. With the entry of a third Brazilian prison-based criminal group in the region, the Família do Norte. This was a group created in the prisons of Manaus, and they were initially allied with the Comando Vermelho, but quickly they go independent and start to run drug trafficking through the tri-border region on their own. And the Família do Norte, in many ways, helps to speed up this process of criminal governance and explosive levels of violence that we see over the past 10, 15 years in the region. And Família do Norte starts to infiltrate local politics in a very aggressive way. And this kind of leads to, again, if we're talking about geopolitics of crime, the CV and PCC operatives in the region kind of see this challenge posed by Familia del Norte as the moment that they're in order to be able to compete, that they have to diversify. So they have to start to participate in other criminal trades in the region. So this is where we see the CV and the PCC expanding to the wider tri-border region to engage in illicit fishing, wildlife trafficking. Illicit gold mining becomes a lot more intense during this time as well, with the rising gold prices. And we see these criminal groups engaging in illicit gold mining in the nearby Javari Valley. And then a new trend kind of emerges, which also helps to, speed up this process of criminal violence, which is criminal groups start to cultivate and process coca and cocaine in the Amazon region. And this is kind of a major development, whereas before the cocaine producing regions, they had to span these kind of 1,000-kilometer route through the Amazon River and through the Putumayo River in Colombia. The cocaine producing regions now start to be a lot closer to Lechis and Tabachinga. And this also means that local youth from indigenous communities are recruited slash coerced into working in these coca plantations. And this is where we see the pernicious effects at the community level really start to increase as well. So a lot of the times, the youth who are working in these coca plantations, they're paid in cocaine-based paste, which is the main form that cocaine is consumed in the region. So they're encouraged by drug traffickers to go back to their communities and earn money by selling cocaine-based paste amongst amongst the people in their community. So this helps to drive what has become a very concerning development, which is a very problematic rise in drug consumption and alcohol abuse in the indigenous communities of the tri-border region and in Lechis and Tabachinga as well. And all these dynamics are kind of exacerbated with the creation of the first kind of fully fledged local group, local criminal group in Lechis and Tabachinga. And this group is created with explicit support from the PCC. So the PCC comes in with money and weapons, and they basically encourage local youth to create this organization, who call themselves Os Crias. So in a very literal form, they were the kids, translated to the kids. And they were basically miners, mostly young men from the three countries of the tri-border region, but they were led by Brazilians from Tabatinga. And Os Crias were kind of a major player, very quickly became a major player in these illicit economies, mostly because they decided to engage in an aggressive assassination campaign against the major drug traffickers from the Familia del Norte and the Comando Vermelho in the region. And we see here in the slide is a decree, a part of one of the decrees. Os Crias, in an almost daily basis, would publish decrees on social media and through text, where they would announce who they were going to kill that day or that week. And you see here, this is the end of one of their decrees, where they use the PCC slogan, Paz, Justiça e Liberdade, and they also add their own spin to it as well, adding humility and equality as well. But basically, Os Crias helped to drive a kind of unprecedented increase in violence in Lechis and Tabachinga, where you start to see executions in public spaces on almost a daily basis. And you also start to see these forms of criminal governance, where you have criminal groups like Os Crias and Comando Vermelho setting rules of community conduct, controlling population flows, and also setting up open-air drug selling points, which is also a very new development to the Amazon region. It is not very common to see in these kind of mid-sized cities, but it's very familiar to those of us who study Rio, who see what the Comando Vermelho does in the favelas of Rio, which is to set up in street corners, set up these open-air drug selling points. And again, the situation of problematic drug consumption and a rise in homelessness as well in Lechis and Tabachinga is in many ways driven by this intense, more intense criminal presence. And I just wanted to add this homicide graphs that we've also included in the report, and that we've put together from Brazilian and Colombian government sources. And this is, I want to thank my colleague Valentina Rincones as well, who I believe is on this call, who helped with the fieldwork and with setting up these data points as well. But I think it's important to have these homicide graphs here just to get a grip of the scale of violence that we're dealing with. Cities that were, relatively peaceful and tranquil places up to 20, 15 years ago have now become some of the most violent places in the Americas. And a lot of that does have to do with this rise in organized crime. A lot of the times, I myself in my own research have been hesitant to kind of use homicides as a kind of a proxy to understand organized crime. But in this case, I think we can very much attribute this increase in violence to the likes of Busquerias, to this presence of these large transnational criminal groups in the region. But it's also worth noting that there's also an increase in police lethality running side by side with this increase in criminal activity as well, right? But these two graphs, I think they really help to exemplify how much more violent the Amazon region has become compared to other regions, particularly when it comes to Brazil, where you've seen a national drop in homicides over the past 10 years, but the Amazon region has been a major outlier to this trend, where homicides have increased by 76% during this time. So this is again this idea that Letícia Tabatinga really can exemplify a lot of these trends for us to kind of practically see the impacts of a rise in organized crime and the impact at the local level. Because what we're also seeing is kind of these same dynamics of larger cities of local low-income youth being attracted to join these criminal groups as a way to make a living. And then you have this whole cycle of mass incarceration and further criminal recruitment and iron fist policing policies that have to exacerbate insecurity. So yeah, these are the things that we're trying to reflect on in the report is how much these patterns are similar to other criminal locations, but also there are unique features to this region of the Amazon that are worth bearing in mind. And a lot of these unique dynamics stem from the fact that what we've learned over the course of the research is that as much as we wanted to talk about the urban context in the Amazon, and it's important for us to bring this in as a kind of need to incorporate urban dynamics into the research of organized crime in the Amazon. What's very clear as well is that what happens in the non-urban context of the Amazon are indelibly connected to these urban dynamics. And that when you talk to local people and to people who are there, you realize that this distinction between urban and non-urban in the Amazon is very difficult to qualify. It's very difficult to really bear out because there's a constant circulation amongst the local population. So, the people who live in nearby indigenous territories or in small towns are constantly going to Letícia and Tabatinga to buy supplies, to go to medical services. So there's a constant coming and going, not only between people, but between goods, between merchandise, both listed and illicit, between the urban and non-urban territories of the tribe border. But I think that again, that's illustrative of the Amazon as a whole, I think. And I think it's important to, over the course of the research, it became clear that we needed to understand a little bit better what was happening in the wider tri-border region to come to grips with the situation of organized crime in Letícia and Tabatinga as well. So there are a lot of worrying trends when it comes to the tri-border that helps us realize the extent to which organized crime is becoming a consolidated presence, a consolidated governance authority in these urban and non-urban territories. And a lot of that has to do with this trend of coca cultivation and processing in the Peruvian Amazon. So what we're seeing is these coca plantations are expanding, and they're expanding southwards towards the Brazilian border here that we see in this map. The border here is the Javari River between Brazil and Peru in the tri-border in the Javari Valley. And what we're having is cocaine plantations being set up in the immediate vicinity of the Javari River. And that's helping criminal groups like the Comando Vermelho achieve a kind of remarkable degree of complementarity amongst their different criminal markets that they're active in. So in having coca plantations in the immediate vicinity of these rivers and lakes, they're able to engage in illicit fishing, which they've specialized in over the past 10 years as well. They're able to use the fish that they're able to gather in this region, mainly the pirarucu, which is the largest river fish in the world. So they use this fish to both feed the workers of the plantations, but to also sell in international markets. And the pirarucu can be sold for many different features, including for its protein, but also for its scale and for leather. And there's many different uses to the pirarucu that makes it a very profitable illicit good. Not only that, they're able to send the cocaine that they process in these labs and plantations in the Javari. They're able to stash these cocaine shipments under the pirarucu in the boats that travel downwards from the Javari through the Amazon. So what we're seeing here is a kind of a rationalizing of criminal logistics and of the illicit supply chain. And this also bears out for gold as well that the Comando Vermelho is able to extract in the region. And all of this kind of helps to further entrench organized crime in the region, right? It makes sense for these large groups to want to be present in the region. They're able to both control drug production and the sale of drugs, which is, a major advancement to the way that they used to operate. And if they're able to also make money out of other illicit trades like gold, like illicit fishing, like wildlife smuggling, this location becomes very strategic and very valuable to the likes of the Comando Vermelho, PCC, but potentially many other groups in the future who may look to this region as a zone of expansion, if you will. I just wanted to bring in the kind of major kind of findings, major takeaways that we've reflected on from this report. It's exactly what I was saying. This issue of criminal convergence in the Amazon has been talked about quite a lot, and I think with the COP coming up, it'll become an even greater topic of discussion. And I just want to kind of emphasize that it's this kind of research, qualitative empirical research on the ground in these kind of strategic locations that help us to kind of understand the practical implications of these criminal convergences. So the implications in Lechista-Tabatinga has been an explosive increase in violence, kind of very kind of new phenomenon for local indigenous communities to deal with, including rising drug consumption and a rise in criminal recruitment. And what we're also seeing is kind of the territorialization of organized crime means that, it's very foreseeable that in the near future, we're going to see new local criminal groups start to emerge. So groups like Los Crias that are extremely violent are socially integrated to these local dynamics, to indigenous communities, to low-income neighborhoods in Lechis and Tabachinga. There's every the kind of variables are all in place for new criminal groups to emerge and engage in these forms of violent criminal competitions with these larger groups that come from the outside. And then just to end here, this is the final slide. We had a policy roundtable right before we published this report with experts from Brazil and Colombia, some of whom are in this call as well, who very kindly helped us work through some policy solutions that we could suggest and kind of try to implement in the region. And the main one truly is, I think, the need for law enforcement and judicial institutions to be interacting with each other more. So both Colombian, Brazilians, and also Peruvian institutions need to be interacting with each other more. That was kind of a very glaring issue that we were seeing in the region. That quite simply, even though Lechista-Tabachinga, they share the same urban spaces, the law enforcement institutions in the two cities do not have joint operations with each other. They don't have specific trainings that they conduct together. So what we saw is that there is a need for more specific training on environmental crimes so that local prosecutors and police officers can have technical knowledge of how these different criminal markets beyond drugs operate as well. There's also a need for greater intelligence sharing, particularly when it comes to financial intelligence units.
That was Gabriel Fenari, head of the Observatory of Illicit Economies in the Amazon Basin at the Global Initiative on Transnational Organized Crime. He's author of a new report from GTOC entitled Illicit Frontiers, Criminal Governance in the Amazon's Tri-Border Region. Find that report and more resources at the GTOC website, globalinitiative.net. For now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Century of Lies is a volunteer production for community radio and syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's AudioPort service. Please support your local community radio station. Become a member. Become a volunteer. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long.
For the Drug Truth Network,
so long.
This is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.